RadioTalkRadio.com.
If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in every Wednesday at 5:30 Pacific Standard Time and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks for closet Christs. The show is the voice of the Axar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with destiny. Greetings in the light of the Most Radiant One. I am Commander Lady Athena, and you are listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command. Tonight we're going to take a little different look at the prism of consciousness, the God-realized states. We're inquiring into knowing reality, knowing the self. And so the topic tonight is awakening to the real. No consciousness is so interesting. It's much like a combination lock. You have to jiggle it here and turn it there, and each person's mind is a little bit different. And it's also like a Chinese puzzle, and you work it and work it until finally that last little turn, and it all comes into a complete and beautiful whole. So one of these shows may return your awareness to your reality, to your true self. Did you ever sit down to do spiritual exercises like I did this morning? And you chant Hue a few times, and you turn your gaze inward, and bam, you're gone. And after this morning for me it was 4 hours, all of a sudden, wham, my eyes open, and it's like, wow, what happened? Where was I? How can you, like, disappear from the world, have no cognition of anything, and all of a sudden, wham, you're back in this wacky, goofy world. Consciousness is very, very interesting. Let me ask you something else. Did you ever have a dream of just having had a romantic encounter so real that you still felt the touch of your lover's lips upon yours when you awakened? Have you ever dreamed of giving birth to a beautiful baby? And you love the baby so much, and maybe you were holding it in your arms and feeling its warmth and kissing its sweet little face, only to awaken and find it was all a dream. And most of you, I guess, have had dream experiences of witnessing terrible events or being faced with great danger or even experiencing the pain and loss of a dear one, to where when you awakened, you had been sobbing and your tears had drenched your pillow and your face was all wet. These are all adventures at different levels of the consciousness. Consciousness is so very multidimensional. The experience that I just mentioned of having disappeared from this dimension for 4 hours. Sometimes when we do that, we're actually working out scenarios and karma in another universe, in another planet, in another complete existence, which is every bit as real or unreal, depending on how you perceive it, as this daily life. And yet it takes place at a level that we're totally, most of us, unaware of. So consciousness is very, very strange. As you know, my whole life has been focused on studying and researching consciousness, exploring my own, practicing all different types of spiritual approaches, studying all types of philosophies, not so much because I was seeking because I was born in this lifetime with an awareness of who I was and where I had come from and my starry origins. But because I find consciousness so fascinating, every person is like a window into infinity, their consciousness, and I like to disappear in different people's worlds. You know, go down to the yacht club and disappear into the world of fishermen or the multimillionaires who live on their yachts, just to go into different worlds and look through the eyes of a different perspective. So tonight I want to look through the eyes of the beloved that you are, that has never left the heart of God. That part of you that remembers still original innocence, purity, holiness, wholeness, and peace. Believe it or not, in highest truth, you have never left home. You remain as God created you. So what in the world is this body that's walking around seemingly, that is in great states of stress and angst a large portion of the time in a majority of lives? What in the world is that? Let me ask you this. Are you happy? And if the answer is no, well, what would it take to make you happy? I bet I could get a lot of answers to that. And most of them have to do with changes that you'd like to make in your experience of your life in this world. But you know why you're really unhappy, if you are? It's because you're trying to make something that never was real. You're trying to fabricate an existence predicated on the illusion of separation from all good or God, from all love, and you're trying to make that real and make it work. And I think we all know, at least if we're at all inquiring into reality, we know by now that it's not going to make us happy if we shift the furniture in the room of our mind. It's only when we toss out the things that we have cluttered our holy minds with and the falsehood that we have bought into and fabricated and invented a false life out of that we will begin to find underneath all of that the truth that has always, always been shining. Just like the sun behind the clouds of a storm. You see, as I have mentioned before, the ego self is the sense of separation from God. And the ego projects an imitation of a world. The ego's perception is totally based on fear. Because whenever you feel separated from God or wholeness, you will naturally experience fear. That fear then extends itself, or not doesn't extend, it actually projects impairment upon a very innocent world. It looks through the eyes of attack and blame and vengeance and anger. And anger fosters assault. And assault fosters more fear, more anger, and more attack. And so we call that whole world that's based upon the projection of imperilment and danger and separation and fear, we call that the ego's nightmare. And so most people are sound asleep in a nightmare that never really ever happened, except in the forgetfulness of self. In that same mind behind the nightmare shines the face of the beloved, which is your own face, restored in your own vision to reality. The Holy Spirit, which is the sense of yourself in that state, extends but never leaves the heart of God. What does it extend? Only one thing, the love of the One. And so, really, in truth, God consciousness is simply when we see only one. That has often been called the atonement or the at-one-ment. And that is the state that once we move our mind back to that place, we find that in highest truth, we've never departed from that state. We simply have opened our eyes from the unreal, and we have returned our awareness to the real. You know, people take very, very long, circuitous approaches to this. I think probably all of us have spent lifetimes in monasteries and convents and meditating and doing all of those long, long and tedious processes to realize the self. But a lifetime of such endeavor is really not necessary. There's really one thing that we have never perhaps really done, and that is to utterly put out of our mind an awareness, body consciousness. We're forever and forever trying to make provision for the body, to make it more beautiful, more sexy, more attractive, more alluring, more thin, more beautiful, more toned, more muscled, more protected, provide for more enjoyment. You know, the whole dreary 9 yards. And yet, unfortunately, it's in an illusory world which is time-bound, and therefore it's on a path of gradual entropy and disintegration. And no matter how many plastic surgeries we may undergo, eventually the body does what all bodies do, and it dissolves back into the elements. And so obviously that is not who we are, because we are immortal beings. We've never been here in highest truth. So it's simply a fiction that has dissolved, is it not? Also, body consciousness is always predicated on a projection into the future or a retreat from the present and clinging into the past. And yet your mind in highest truth is blank when you project in the future, because there's nothing there. And when you're caught up in the past, you're not present here, so you're not truly alive. You have made a departure into a field of total illusion. The only moment to approach the real is now, in this instant. God is always here and now. There's no necessity to wait, no need to project, and never any imperative to delay. Let me ask you this. What if you made all of the world that you're in right now, your life, both good and bad, all of its dynamics, all of its karma dramas and melodramas and not-so-melodramas, what if you made all this up? What if none of it was real? What if you one day awakened and you began to laugh away the fact that you ever believed that you were in a human body living in the 21st century on this little planet Earth, having to go and do the freeways and the jobs and the spouses and the kids and the whole 9 yards? What if it, just like some of the experiences I've just recounted, what if you just suddenly woke up and it was just not there? Well, what do you think the word apocalypse means? Or revelation? It means just that. The uncovering. The revelation of what's always been there. And yet to the ego, it's looking at all sorts of dire scenarios. Attack and defense and protection and all that stuff. What, I ask you, are you trying to protect? What are all those bolts and locks on doors for? What is it that you have so precious that you have to have all these alarm systems? Oh, it's gotten to be a joke. Who pays attention to anyone's car alarms anymore, right? You just look at a car and you can set its alarm off. Nobody pays any attention. So these are all parts of the stratagems of the ego to reinforce fear and separation. What if you just suddenly decided that you would not focus any longer on what you don't want to have as real? What if you just decided, okay, I'm just going to focus on what I do want? I mean, how easy is that, to simply not focus any longer on what you don't want and to begin to focus your full attention on what you do want? I'm suggesting that that is what we can do. We did a show on returning to the realm of the real and moving in and making our life in reality far more interesting and engaging than keeping our focus here in this third dimension. I had a lot of feedback from that show. Everybody loved it. You know, we don't often think about that. When you depart this dimension, you're going to go somewhere, aren't you? Usually you go where you have built up a strong thought form of expectation. What if you just dropped all of that right now and the belief that you're a limited body and that you could this moment depart from the dream and enter reality? I suppose a lot of people would say, well, if I could have done it, I would have. Well, try something new. One of the masters one time said to me when I was wanting to return to an old situation that I had found very pleasurable, the master said, you've had that experience. Now go get some new experiences. So if you've done all the things and you still don't know who you are, get up and try something new. Try something that you've never, ever done before. They say that the mark of a person who's not very bright is someone who does the same thing over and over again and expects different results. So I encourage you to keep turning that combination lock of your multidimensional self until you return your holy mind to the place in which, in highest truth, you have never left, except in an extension into a time-space continuum, which is basically an illusion. It's a holodeck. It's a holodeck for soul to gain awareness of different states of being. And you have simply bought too much into the computer program, and it's time to say, just like the Star Trek crew, end program and step out of the holodeck. So if all of this has been simply something that you have chosen to make real and you've fabricated it, how does one awaken? Well, it's very simple. The first thing is to recognize that one perception is real and the other is not, and simply focus on what is real. How do you know what is real? It makes you happy, permanently happy. It makes you happy for no reason. If you're happy because you have a reason, then you have to really look to see if you're really happy. Because what if all that disappeared? Would you still be happy? Sai Baba says happiness is union with God. It's interesting because he also says that divinity is purity, and purity is unity. Well, within the word unity and union, you have the word uni, which means one, U-N-I, one. So again, let's reframe it. Divinity is perceiving the one. Purity is living in the one and from the one. So the atonement, which we have come to extend to each other, is the vision of the oneness. When we look at another brother or sister and we say namaste, it would be wonderful if that could be our reality and just not another conventional greeting. To say namaste means I bow to you. I bow to the divinity that is within you. You know, my late sister-in-law was on a, what do you call those commuter trains in New York, the underground, and she was standing. There were no seats. And someone came up behind her and stuck a knife that he had concealed in his overcoat in her ribs and said, don't say anything or, you know, this goes right into you. And she turned around and she looked this man in the eyes and she said, the Christ within me loves and greets the Christ in you. At which point the man dropped his knife and he fled from her as quickly as possible. She, needless to say, was a great, great soul. She was also a minister in unity and had gotten that message of the oneness of all life. So likewise, we find that the ego self will build up all of these theologies and mythologies to explain its origin. I find it interesting watching television lately because they've been examining all the mystery societies, the Knights Templar and the Masonic lodges and just different societies through the ages. But if you stop to think about it, these are all the ego trying to justify its existence because none of them are real in any eternal sense, not a single one of them. I mean, how wacky is this, that we believe that somehow we're here because somebody wiggled with our DNA, or there are beings in human form who are actually reptilians that are getting ready to eat us for dinner, or that somebody ate an apple, and because of the apple we were cast out of the garden, or we landed on Mount Olympus and, you know, on and on and on and on and on and on. Every single religious tradition has some mythology that, oh yeah, well, it's historically, in many cases, quote, quote, true, but we're not talking about what the mind conjures up as being true. We're talking about that satyam, that truth, that never changes. Remember, the definition of truth is that which never, never changes. If it can be changed or modified, it is a temporary appearance. But we're talking about satyam, truth. That is birthless, deathless, immortal, eternally whole, eternally pure. That. So, divinity is purity, purity is unity. God consciousness is to see only one. It's interesting that all true teachers, particularly great gurus, really great master teachers, are simply mirrors. It's very, very interesting because when you come to a very, very great teacher. You look at them, but you don't really see them. You see yourself. They reflect back to you exactly, in exact measure, your state of consciousness. Now, some people will go to a great teacher, and they will see only their sin, their unworthiness, their lack, their nakedness exposed. And so they turn from that teacher in horror. Sometimes they even turn in a very negative way and begin to badmouth and castigate that teacher or accuse them of some terrible sexual misconduct. I've learned to, when I hear people badmouthing anyone, but especially a very enlightened soul, I just ignore it. Boy, if you did a Google on anyone out there that's truly enlightened, you'll find that it's about evenly divided between their detractors and accusers and those that are croaking their praises. Why is that? Well, Sai Baba said that you cannot have praise without blame. And the pit of denigration is as deep in proportion to the pile of affirmation and approbation. So praise and blame, again, the two sides of the same coin. In the lower worlds, really, you can't have one without the other. So don't take things to heart if you can't please everyone. You know, the world will really love you if you're worldly. But if you're truly enlightened, they will either put you up on a pedestal and try to create a religion around you and worship you, which no true teacher wants, or they'll flee from you and say all manner of negative things against you. So there was a great evangelist one time, I think it was Smith Wigglesworth, and he said, if you haven't left them either mad or glad, you haven't taught them anything of worth. So we're going to make people mad or glad just by walking through the room. So don't let that affect your walk in the reality of the self that you are. So when people come to a guru and they see their negative self reflected, what is that? They're seeing the dweller on the threshold. The dweller on the threshold is all of the corporate misidentifications of self that forms like this huge, dark, thought form that dwells between you and the realm of the real. And you must dissolve that through the light of the illumined gaze. You dissolve it by standing and confronting it without one iota of fear, because you know that you know that you know that you are love. And you are one with God. And that gaze dissolves all of the corporate karma or all the corporate projections and misidentifications in one nanosecond. And you suddenly find that you're home in God and you have never left the heart of God. People put way too much stock in what they feel and the thoughts that float through their mind. Did you know that you share the thought and the feeling atmosphere with all human beings? That's what's called a mental plane and an astral plane. What makes you think that all those feelings that you're feeling are yours? We all know that if we go into a room where someone is really depressed and we hang out with that person long enough, if we're not very, very strong, we'll tend to go into depression or anger or whatever state is there. Same thing with joy. You go into a room where people are joyful and uplifted and laughing, chances are your vibration will shift into that. But if you're so unintegrated with your reality that you simply give sway to every thought that goes through your mind, and every feeling that goes through your emotional body, how can you ever be established in the self? Samadhi simply means equal-mindedness. It means viragya, to be detached, as we mentioned in our last show, to simply be the objective observer. You simply watch life. Learn to observe your life and go through your day. Just use this if you want as a spiritual exercise. Practice not reacting. Learn to respond from your heart, from your truth, from your love. For example, very often when I come down to make my coffee in the morning, I'm half out of my body. And in the early days when I was being taught this by my teachers, I very many times knocked over my coffee pot while I was trying to make coffee, which meant water and coffee grounds, you know, all over the cabinets and down on the floor and in the cracks and in the drawers and everything. And, of course, like most people, I would have a few choice words to utter into the atmosphere, which were not exactly spiritual, and I'd be angry, and, you know, so now I have to clean it up. And the master told me, why don't you just not go there? You're going to have to clean it up anyway. Why don't you just clean it up and not put a lot of energy into it? And so I train myself gradually, or when people come up suddenly and frighten you, I train myself to hold my consciousness very still and not to react with fear. I train myself to not have to respond every time someone makes a statement. If it's a true statement, I will come in and perhaps speak into it. If it's a negative statement or gossip or slander, or if it's a statement of weakness, lack, and limitation that many people speak about themselves, I have learned not to reinforce that by adding my energy and my focus into it. I've trained myself to respond to the real. And I encourage you to practice that. If you want to walk as an ascended being, as a mastered soul, as a masterful soul, begin to master yourself and move from reaction to response. The question is, what is the right thing to do that will always be appropriate? The appropriate thing to always do is to be kind and to respond from the fullness of the truth as you know it. Of course, we all are in the progression of moving into greater and greater realizations of truth. There's the plus factor involved here. But if you stay present with what is so for you right now, the measure of light, the measure of realization that you have right now, and you hold to that, and you work, live, and teach from your highest level, without having one word for the masses in the world, when you go to your job in the world, where you put on one face and one persona, and another when you go to your temple or your church or whatever, and then you have another face. No, don't do that. Have one face. Turn yourself inside out so that the person that you are on the inside is the person that you present on the outside. You know, I'm pretty far out. I'm about as far out as a being can be. And I have never, ever, ever not been myself. I am the same whether I'm with an enlightened master or I'm with somebody that's focused into their human identity. And I just talk kindly and with love, not trying to teach or lord it over anyone, but I just speak from the real and the true. And I have never, ever had anybody argue or question that or make fun of me. I've never, ever had anyone do that. And it's because they sense that I'm coming from reality. I'm not trying to put on a show or a facade or be an actor. In fact, that's actually the word hypocrite means an actor. I'm not being an actor. I'm simply living from my reality. Is my reality real? Well, probably not. It's as real as anybody else's. It's a functional reality for me at this stage. I will, like us all, move into greater realizations of self. But right now, I'm living, working, and teaching from the degree of realization that I've attained and the degree of truth that I have moved into. And I'm always looking to move to the next highest and the next more excellent choice. I will say this. I'm completely happy, completely contented, and completely fulfilled. And if I were to die in the next 10 minutes, I could look myself in the face on the inner realms and feel complete. And it's that I would like to share with all of you who listen to this show, because it's something that I have worked all my life, perhaps, in a very dedicated way to inquire into. So in a sense, I have done that. But in another sense, it was a choice that I made. And you know, when you make a decision that's irrevocable, where you say, okay, this is it, this is the deal, going back is no longer an option. I felt that way when I stopped smoking, when I stopped drinking, when I quit my 3D job. It's like, you know, smoking's no longer an option. That's so not going to happen. That's not an option. Drinking is not an option. Going back and having to do a 9-to-5 job for a salary for somebody else and not do my mission and not doing this work that I'm doing now that God created me to do and be, that is so not an option. And because I put my little foot down really hard and took that step and that stance, I created that way for myself. And I encourage you to do that as well. Move where you want to go and make a return to the past not an option. End cycle on anger, attack, gossip, slander, projecting evil on other people. Sai Baba has said that when we project negativity on another person, because of the nature of the age that we're in, that immediately becomes the state that we are going to have to walk out ourselves. So therefore, let us be very, very diligent in seeking for every evidence of divinity in the people that come into our lives and around us, every morsel of goodness that we can ferret out. Let's not even look for anything else but the Holy Son of God in each person. Let us look for the light, the kindness, the goodness. And when people are acting gnarly and cantankerous, and let's interpret that as a plea for healing, understanding, and love. If we interpret negativity as a distress call, which is what the Holy Spirit does when we get cantankerous, if we interpret negativity as a distress call, we're going to respond in a very, very different way. When people are out of balance, it's never about you. It's always about something that they're struggling with that's not real, but they think it's real. Take, for example, a child. When your children have nightmares, you don't go into the bedroom and say, oh, that's not real, that's just your imagination, because children know very well that what they're experiencing is real. And if you tell them it's not real, they're going to make you feel like you just don't understand them, and they're going to begin to not share with you. So what you do is rather say, it's okay, honey. You're awake now. The light has come, and you're safe. All is well. So you point to the light. When your mind is troubled and upset, when that inner child that we all have within us that never seems to grow up, there's always a young boy or a young girl inside us. And when that part of us gets frightened, just remind it, the light has come, beloved. You've never left home. You're with God. You're safe. All is well. Begin to put your attention fully and completely on your oneness with God. Don't even go there when it comes to putting energy into lack, limitation, a sense of separation, or inferiority. What you speak out of your mouth, you begin to create as a law that you then have to fulfill. That's called living under the law of karma. Don't do that to yourself. Let blessings come out of your mouth. Be your own best friend. If you can't say something nice about yourself or another, then don't say anything at all. And train your mind not to say anything negative either. Direct your thoughts into what is good, what is praiseworthy, what is noble, what is pure, what is uplifting, what is eternally true and right and good about you and your life. Those are some of the thoughts that I think will be tremendously useful for us as we deepen and examine this prism of the self in each of these successive cosmic pep talks, these seminars on self-realization, these God consciousness quests that we have each week, where during the week you and I are both diligently working in the field of the self to expand that awareness, to become aware of the self and more of the nuances of our multidimensionality. We're all of us students and teachers at the same time. And I find that I pray ardently every day that God will teach me how to work more skillfully with people as a teacher. I pray and pray and pray that I can find the tools that will open those prisons that people have put themselves in with the labyrinth that they've woven of complexity around their holy minds and their holy lives. Sometimes it's like bushwhacking, where that person, that beautiful Christed being, is sitting in a thicket of brambles with thorns all over. And I have a great passion to go in and to set them free. But you know, you really don't have to do that, because in highest truth, no one is bound. We are all God, pretending to be individuals, pretending to be humans with limitation, pretending to be on a course of evolvement and awakening. None of that is really true. In highest truth, who is there to teach? What is there that we do not know? And who could possibly be lost? So we're only having an experience of limitation that isn't in any real sense real, but it's real enough to make us lose sleep and to enter into stress and depression and anger and sorrow and fear. What I'm suggesting is that instead of doubting the good things about yourself, begin to doubt that negative storyteller that tells you that you're not made in the image and likeness of God, that tells you that you're not whole and holy and pure and eternal and divine. Those negative voices are the ones that you need to doubt and question, not the affirming voices. And remember again, you shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. People quote that often, but they don't quote the passage just before that statement. And it goes something like this. This is Jesus speaking. If ye abide in me, and my truth abides in you, ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. What does it mean to abide in Christ? It means to be in the state of at-one-ment, one with the Father, one with the truth. And when you abide in the truth, and the truth abides in you, and you live in that flow of truth, it sets you free. And then you become an agent of freedom for others. Because not one single person can ever move into freedom without freeing others. Get this and get it clearly, that we all go up or not, because we're going up as one. One family of light. Your brother's happiness and your sister's happiness is your happiness. And their unhappiness is your unhappiness. And we are our brother's keepers, because in truth, we are our brother and our sister. There is no other. We all bleed red. We all were God-breathed, which made us living souls. We were all molded by the divine hands in the image and likeness of the divine. And we're all here for one purpose, to teach only love, because love is what we are. You will have probably recognized some of the thoughts that I'm sharing tonight as those of Jesus from the Course in Miracles. I've often suggested that that's one of the best approaches if you want to save time, because Jesus gave the Course in Miracles for a cosmic accelerated course for people who are ready to put aside the nightmare of the ego and to move into the real and to become true teachers of God. And so it's a course in miracles. And remember, miracles occur when for an instant we allow reality to enter our circumstances. Many of you know that I've participated for many years with the Benny Hinn Healing Crusades, and I have seen the most incredible miracles of healing take place. And I've always been very interested to watch the Holy Spirit working through various ministries when these miracles occur. And the miracles are simply a return to the realm of the real. That's all it is. Because if in highest truth we've never left the heart of God, if in highest truth sickness, death, disease, pain, torture, and loss are all fearful projections of the ego mind, and in truth they never ever happened, they're just a bad dream, then it makes sense that miracles are simply a return to normalcy, to the real. And they are received by all kinds of people, believers, non-believers, doubters, the fallen and the wicked, the virtuous and the good, it doesn't matter. The miracles all return the inheritance, the kingdom inheritance, the truth to the people who are the incarnations of the beloved here in time and space. So miracles are instantaneous movements into reality that have permanent effects. And the Course in Miracles say that if we don't have miracles every day, there's something wrong. Miracles are always a gift of love. And so we are designed to be miracle workers. We are designed to follow in the footsteps of our elder brother, Jesus. Because Jesus was the one who bridged the chasm from the impossible, which never occurred, which is separation from God. But because we believed it did happen, he had to deal with it. And he took that experience on what he calls the last useless journey, which was the crucifixion, in which he experienced for an instant separation from Source and bridged it so that we could once again return to wholeness. And then the resurrection was simply the return to the real, which is immortality. That is your heritage, beloved. And what he did for you, you can claim as your very own, because it only takes one of us to do it for all of us. And no one steps free alone. So all of you now walk in that anointing. Let the Christ that you are, let the Savior that you are, let the Bodhisattva that you are, come out of all sense of closeted limitation and move about amongst the sons and daughters of humanity, and let your light so shine that people only see the One. And know that you're here only to be truly helpful. You're here to do the will of He who sent you. You don't have to know what to say or what to do, because He who sent you goes with you, and you are healed as you allow Him to teach you how to be healed. And you are healed simply by returning your mind to your wholeness. The sickness and the separation was a bad dream. Awaken now to the happy dream of the dawning golden age. And then one day you will awaken and find that even the happy dream is shown away in the light of the home in which you dwell eternally with the One. It is a great, great thrill in my heart to share these beautiful, beautiful thoughts with you. I hope that they are making a difference in your life. And your exercise for this coming week is to find God's thoughts. God's thoughts are thoughts and remembrances of your holiness and your eternal state. You can find them if you seek for them in your mind. They are the thoughts that are truly happy and truly affirming. God will never tell you things that will depress you or judge you. So the thoughts of God are joyful and whole and loving. Find them in your holy mind. Ask for them. Expect to find them. Cherish them. And allow them to shine away all the clouds of the ego's nightmare. And remember Baruch Beishan, which means the blessings already are. They are here for you. They're available now. Just receive them. Just be the Hue man, the God man. That is who you truly are. And let's just do a nice, beautiful chant, a love song to God, and that is the Hue, the eternal and heavenly unified One. Take a deep breath. Here.